Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another edition of the High Motion Podcast. I'm your co-host, Jovan Alford, and I'll be shortly joined by the arena football insider himself, Harrison Brown, arenafan.com, as we discuss an interesting, an exciting, a kind of arena bowl that we didn't expect it from this past weekend between the Albany Empire and the Philadelphia Soul. But before we discuss that, Arena Bowl weekend in general and what, you know, to look forward to going to the offseason, make sure to check us out on various platforms. First and foremost, if you missed this one or any other ones, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts. Go to the podcast app on your iPhone. Just go there, search Total Sports Live, TSL Podcast. You can hit the subscribe button. But if you do that, you'll be able to download all the episodes from this season of AFL Talk that we've done. Or you can leave us a rating and review, which we do appreciate. Well, if we try to, you know, end this off on a good note, but also want to hear everybody else's thoughts on the High Motion Podcast, what we did good and what we could, you know, possibly do better, or what you want us to talk about more going into next season. And also, we're on Spotify as well. Just search Total Sports Live TSL Podcast. Hit the follow button on there, and again, you'll be able to listen to us on that platform as well. But we got to talk about Arena Bowl 32, which was interesting as the Soul started out on a good note, but they just couldn't get it done. And Albany won, the Empire won 45-27 to get their first Arena Bowl in franchise history. Joining me to discuss that all and Arena Bowl 32 media day and weekend and everything that happened up there is none other than the AFL insider himself, Harrison Brown of arenafan.com. Harrison, how are you doing? How was Arena Bowl weekend? And that was an interesting Arena Bowl, exciting for one side, but disappointing for another side.
Yeah, what's up, bro? Nah, it was a good weekend. Had a lot of fun covering all the AFL activities and all that. It's always a good time, you know, seeing everybody from the league and stuff like that. But yeah, it was a good game in that first quarter. We had a real good Arena Bowl, and then Albany just went ahead and ran with it. So our predictions, me and Jovan did both pick the Soul to win the Arena Bowl, so we were off there. Definitely not our best prediction, but it was a good weekend, man.
Yeah, for sure. And before we, you know, discuss the game at large, you had a chance to cover media day, which was on Saturday, the day before of Arena Bowl 32. And you had a chance to talk to a lot of players. You know, you talked to the commish, you talked to Clint, you talked to Malachi, you talked to Romaine, you talked to Bo Bell. Trying to think who else you talked to. You talked to Fabian Guerra. You talked to a lot of people. I would say, you know, what did you learn from the Soul players? But we're past the game. But I think what really stood out to me from all those interviews was your conversation with Fabian Guerra, and just his, you know, his story on how he got to this, you know, how he got to, you know, this point of his career, you know, being the co-rookie of the year, sharing it with Antoine Grant. So just talk about that interview, and then also your conversation with Randall Bowe at Arena Bowl 32 Media Day as well.
Yeah, Fabian's a good dude, and he had a great year this year, definitely with the Destroyers. That 8-touchdown game he had definitely kind of propelled him onto the scene. But I had heard his name a little bit from the NAL circuit last year. I don't stay up to date too much with the NAL, but I kind of have a feel for, you know, some of the top guys. And he was a guy whose name definitely came up to me a few times. And he really he displayed a lot of his talent in the AAF. And once I saw that he went from the NAL to the AAF, it definitely made sense for him to go to the AFL. And I know Coach Salt thought the same thing. So he had a great year this year, and we had a good conversation, hearing a little bit about his 2-day workout with the Albany Empire last year. I didn't even know about that, so that was definitely interesting that Coach Keith and them had him in for the workout. Unfortunately, he didn't make it, but I mean, that's kind of common practice in the AFL. A lot of guys get 2-day workouts, and sometimes you do make it, sometimes you don't. So I guess just from their roster, they just didn't have the spot for him. But it was really interesting to hear about, you know, his past. He has a unique past going from the NAL to the AAF. I would argue that he's probably the only player to do that. We definitely had some AFL guys there as well, but from the NAL, a second-tier AFL league or arena football league, to make it to the AAF is definitely impressive. So that was cool. It was cool to formally meet him. Me and you had talked about him a lot on this podcast this year, just watching his game. But it was cool to meet him and talk to him, hear about his story. And then Commissioner Bowe, he's a really good dude. It's good to talk to him. I had done the interview before, so we kind of knew each other. But it was cool to talk to him, see where, you know, his head was at with all the expansion. The timeline he said to me and Matt Cass was 1 to 2 weeks, and I think that was the timeline they said on stage as well, was about a week or two for the expansion announcement. So we're all holding out hope that within, you know, the next week or so, we have some news on what franchises and what cities will be joining the league. But, I mean, besides that, that's obviously, you know, expansion is what everyone wants to know. But besides that, we talked about the DraftKings sponsorship. That was something that he was really pleased with. He thought it was a home run, and that as more teams join, it will only expand the things they're able to do with that. Like we've kind of talked about here on the podcast, you know, with six teams, it's been fun this year, but a league with 10 teams or 12 teams or 14 teams, you're going to have way more options in DraftKings. It'll just make things more fluent. There'll be more receivers playing in games, more quarterbacks. This year, you kind of had your people who you knew were going to do good, and then you kind of had to guess the sleeper of the week. Like week one, if you picked Desmond Apps, you definitely won. The playoffs, you picked Darius Reynolds, you did really well. You know, so whoever had the breakout game, you already know. So whoever had the breakout game, that was kind of who the best player was in DraftKings. I think as the teams expand and as we get more rosters and a fuller league, I think DraftKings will open up. So, it was good to talk to the commissioner, just kind of see how it was. He was definitely enjoying Arena Bowl weekend. He said he had a good time, you know, seeing everyone and catching up and stuff like that. So, yeah, media day is always a good time to get some NFL information. There's a bunch of rumors floating around. Everyone has a different rumor. Everyone has a different source. So you hear a bunch of stuff, and it's just about filtering what you think. Okay, that could actually happen, and okay, there's no way that's going to happen. So, I mean, I think throughout the weekend it went from everyone was really expecting Cleveland, and now I don't think that many people are expecting maybe Cleveland doesn't come back because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. So it's going to be interesting.
Or Newark.
I mean, I don't really. Huh?
I said, or even Newark, because I think I read that as well, that they're not in the picture for 2020 either.
Yeah, no Newark for 2020. So there wasn't any interest from them, Newark, on having an AFL team. So, like, you hear a bunch of different stuff there, and you hear a bunch of different random cities. Like, they said that they had 5 cities on the Twitter, so I mean, I could probably say like 15 different cities that I heard throughout the weekend from like a various number of people. Like, it's always crazy this time of year. No one, like, honestly, except for the higher ups, usually no one really knows what's going on. It's all kind of speculation. So it's a bunch of guessing, but I'm just waiting for the formal announcement. I always tell everyone, anyone that's like, you know, new to the AFL or trying to figure out where they're going, nothing is true until there's a formal announcement, because we're still waiting on those three teams in Mexico with Univision as a sponsor in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, good old Univision in Mexico. But like you said, a great time to just catch up and see, you know, bring the best of the best all in one setting to talk about the game and the sport and where it's going. It's always a great time. And talking about the game, it was an interesting game on Sunday night. The Philadelphia Soul, you know, made a statement taking the ball first, which is unlike them because, as you point out on this podcast before, Harrison, Clint Dozell likes to defer to the second half, but they got the ball first, made a statement. Darius Prince just put a little double move on the Albany DB and took it to the house to make it 7-0, and then Albany got the ball back and they Malachi Jones had a surprising fumble, but that was more of a James Romaine, Peanut Tillman punch out. And you think the Soul were going to take this 14-0 commanding lead, and you're thinking, could the Soul pull the upset? Long and behold, they did not. Maurice Leggett on the Soul's offense possession intercepted the ball and took it to the house, and I saw some very disappointing tackling on that play by the Soul, which had me a little concerned. And then from there, it was almost like we know how the story goes with Albany. Even though the Soul punched back with B.J. Bunn scoring his only touchdown in the game on a beautiful route, and the play designed by the Soul, it wasn't enough as they fell 45-28. Harrison, we look at this game here. Philadelphia was held scoreless from the 5:37 mark of the second quarter to the 13:45 mark of the fourth quarter. They were 0-3 on fourth down conversions. Tommy Grady, another stellar game for him, 16-25, 200 yards, five TDs. Don't know if he should have gotten MVP, but that's up for discussion. Quentin Sims, an amazing game, dominating game, 9 receptions for 93 yards and 4 TDs. Malachi Jones, held out the end zone again, which is kind of – had a quiet game, which has been kind of interesting to end this season. 5 receptions for 84 yards and 0 TDs. Tevin Homer, another outstanding game for him, 11.5 total tackles, 1 pass breakup. Mo Leggett, 5 total tackles, a fumble recovery, and an interception. On the Philly side, Dan Rodaball, outside of the interception, really – was pretty good for the most part until he got to the red zone, 26-33 for 300 yards, 4 TDs. B.J. Bunn, what a performance for the rookie, 10 receptions for 129 yards and a TD. Darius Prince, 9 receptions for 99 yards, 2 TDs. Darius Reynolds, 5 receptions for 65 yards, but he had to go back on defense due to the injury to Tyrell Robinson. And then Dwayne Hollis, 7 total tackles, a tackle for a loss and a pass breakup. So, with all that information being spewed out to you all at once, Harrison, what were your thoughts on the game? What do you think went wrong for the Soul? And did they ultimately give this game away early on in the first quarter?
Yeah, it was just a bunch of missed opportunities for the Soul. I definitely feel like they had their opportunities to make their mark on that game, to at least make it closer and put some pressure on Albany and, you know, maybe keep it to within a one-score game. And like you mentioned, they had that huge opportunity early to jump out to that 14-0 lead after the Romaine forced fumble. Bad read from Rodaball throwing the double coverage. Mo Leggett with the longest interception return in Arena Bowl history, 54 yards. That definitely was a jolt the other way. That was a momentum shifter to Albany that obviously got the crowd very into the game. That's a huge play, super exciting. So that definitely was a big factor. But then another thing, and it was something that basically everyone who previewed this game talked about, from both sides, coaching staff to Coffee to Arena Fan to us, it was all about getting pressure on Grady and being efficient in the red zone for the Soul. And they didn't do either.
Right.
They got no pressure on Grady all night. I think he got hit maybe once the entire game.
Until the fourth quarter.
Knockdown.
I said until the fourth quarter, that's when the only time they was able to get pressure, like that last.
Right,
I think,
it was just like a knockdown. Yeah, so they needed to get pressure on Grady. They needed to clog up those throwing lanes, and they didn't. He kind of was able to sit back there and pick them apart freely. But really, I wouldn't even hold this game on the defense. I think when you look at this game, you have to look at Adrian Ferns' 5 red zone rushing attempts. He only got 1 yard, 0 touchdowns. That doesn't happen for the Soul. I can't name a time where the Soul have taken 5 red zone rushing attempts and not scored on one since Clint Dolezal has taken over in 2012. I can't name one time the offense has been that bad in the red zone. So that really didn't help. And they weren't great throwing the ball in the red zone either. They tried the dive option with Rodaball. Hated that play call, just going to be honest. But, yeah, they just couldn't get it in the red zone. And we talked about it, how Albany likes to play a lot of soft man coverage, and the Soul like to run a lot of three-step. So it matched up for the Soul well. They were going to get their red zone opportunities. But then, you know, where the money's made, the best red zone defense in the league is Albany. The best red zone offense is Philly. Albany showed up. Albany played stingy. Terrence Moore had a really good game. Joe Sykes is obviously a difference maker. Fritz has had a really good season. So they showed up in the red zone. They won the game in the red zone, really. You know, when the Soul go out and don't score in the red zone like that, it's extremely uncharacteristic. of them. So that was honestly where I think the game was determined. The interception was huge early on. The Soul really had an opportunity there. But, you know, just a couple other things from the game. You mentioned B.J. Bunn. I thought he had a great game. From a guy who was supposed to be on IR throughout the week, wasn't going to play, to Washa's not going to play, Bunn's off IR, you're in the game. Obviously, he's been a guy who's played a bunch this year, so it's not like he was a rookie by any stretch. I mean, he was a rookie, but after a certain point in the season, you become not a rookie anymore. When you've played, you know, close to 10 mm-hmm. games or more than 10 games like Bunn has, he's not necessarily right. a rookie by definition anymore. So, you know, he went out there and played really well, and Coach Delzell mentioned how he was a deserving guy who worked hard all year. So it was good to see him play. Obviously, it would have been a huge factor if Washa was out there. But, I mean, we can't really say that that would have changed the game because look at the numbers B.J. Bunn put up. What were we expecting Washa to do in his first game back? So that wasn't really it. I just think it was missed opportunities. When you're in the red zone, you've got to be able to punch the ball, and it's something the Soul preach on. It didn't look great throwing the ball either. I think Lonnie Outlaw had a really nice touchdown where he jumped over someone. So that was good. But other than that, the red zone was just, I mean, it was bad. It was straight up bad. There was no other way to say it, really. They struggled in the red zone. And when you struggle in the red zone against Albany, I mean, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. And I like how you said, you know, you can't really pin this on the defense because the defense is only can only do what they're asked to do. And, you know, for a defense that kind of was almost playing like a bend but don't break defense a little bit, it was almost like we're going to let anybody else but Malachi Jones beat us. And Quentin Sims had himself a game. But at the same token, I think even Jaws was saying it on the broadcast. They asked him, like, what does the Soul need to do? And he said on defense, he said we need to play more man-to-man defense and play aggressive. And the only time they played man-to-man defense and got aggressive, what happened? Albany turned it over on all four downs. So I'm kind of puzzled why they didn't play that earlier in the game. And then on the other side of things, I'm also wondering about, you know, in addition to that, I'm also wondering about what happened, you know, with the other turnover we had. Darius Prince, he had the ball and he fumbled. So that's another momentum shift in play. And like you said, Harrison, it was just a whole bunch of momentum shift in plays. But the thing, like I said, that stood out to me was that on defense, you know, why not continue to play man to man? If you get in a track meet, so be it. But you got to not let Grady just sit back, like you said, and pick you apart where it's just one dot here, one pass here, one pass here, one pass here, boom, 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 touchdown. Like, you got to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, that feels like the Malachi Jones effect. When you have a player out there like that, and it's kind of what Darius Reynolds brought back to the offense in week one against the Valor of the playoffs. With Malachi Jones out there, you have to account for him. You know, you kind of have to bracket him. You have to maybe play a little bit softer coverage, zone up on him. But like you said, Grady was kind of able to pick them apart, especially in the first half. He did a really good job getting Quinn Sims the ball. But I felt like the defense overall, I mean, I felt like they held their own. You hold a team to 45 points, and then also one of those is a pick six, so you take it back to 38 points. You hold a team to 38 points offensively, like Albany, you should win the game. I mean, you hold an offense like Albany's to 38 points, there's no way you should walk out of there without the W. So, I mean, I really do. I attribute this loss to the offense. They just didn't. They didn't have it. You know, they weren't right all night. They were off. There was some missed throws. There was some missed timed routes. Like you mentioned, Prince fumbled. Terrence Moore is a great player. Terrence Moore made a nice play right there. Came right in, stripped the ball out. I saw that Prince was obviously very upset after that fumble. I think he kind of knew how big a momentum and how big a turning point that was. One play after the onside kick that the Soul recovered. I mean, you talk about football being a roller coaster game. We go, you know, Soul score, Soul onside kick, they get it back, everything's looking good. Boom, next play, fumble, Albany ball, Albany scores. That's huge. That's huge in the turn of a game at a team's home field in Albany. I mean, as soon as that ball pops out, the crowd goes crazy. As soon as Albany scores, the crowd goes crazy. And the crowd was a huge factor in that game. I would definitely say so. They were loud all night. You could see that it affected the Soul offense. Things just didn't look as fluent. It's hard to get your snap count off, even though they didn't really have any false start penalties. It's just the general, with their crowd being so loud, it's hard to run an offense. It makes things a lot more difficult. There's going to be some miscommunication, some missed time stuff, and it showed. It showed on Sunday.
It did. And, you know, I think, like you said, falls on offense and offense, like you said, they just weren't hitting them short intermediate routes. The deep routes, they was cool, but intermediate, they just didn't get the job done. And like you said, going 0-3 in red zone, you're not going to win many ball games. Doesn't matter what league you're playing in, NFL, CFL, AFL, NAL, you know, doesn't matter. High school, college, doesn't matter. If you can't convert in the red zone, you're going to have so problem. So, you know, that's what it is. Albany wins 45-28. They are now the new kings of the AFL. You know, the team that was great from the onset, they finished business. They finished business, Harrison. And, you know, that leads me to the next, you know, topic of discussion is that, you know, looking forward now, what's the future, you know, for both of these squads, you know. Like we mentioned before on this podcast, everybody's a free agent, you know, after this season. And, you know, Albany looks like they're poised to be the next AFL dynasty because they just have those players that believe in their system. And as I told you via text message during the game, Jeremy Richardson kind of let that be known about his thoughts about Philly, but also, you know, about Albany and the type of players that they bring in, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I don't. It's rare to see in any sport, any league, a team to repeat. You know, a team to repeat to win a championship is very hard to do. So that being said, you know, where do you see the futures for both of these teams heading? I think starting off, we're going to save the soul for last. But with Albany, where do you see their future heading into next season?
Well, I mean, first things first, and Coach Keith mentioned it, how great his assistant coaches were. And Les Moss was the assistant coach of the year. Dave Ewert has been a really good coach for a long time.
Yeah.
With expansion franchises coming, it'll be interesting to see if one of them gets a head coaching opportunity. And that's going to be a huge thing potentially for the offense and the team in general. Like, let's say Les Moss got a head coaching job as the offensive coordinator and general manager. And I know Tommy Grady does a lot of his own play calls, but him and Les are kind of just on the same page. You know, they're generally on the same page. They've been working together for 4 or 5 years now, dating back to Jacksonville. So that's one big thing that could happen for Albany this year. But other than that, I do. I think Albany's in a good spot. I think when you have a fan base like that that supports the way that they do, and being in Albany definitely showed me how much that they really support the Empire. There was banners in the pizza shops. Arena Bowl was promoted all around town. The Jumbotron outside of the arena had arena football highlights going on. I think it was 50-yard dash stuff, who, by the way, had a great weekend. Ben Fratinelli killed it this weekend. Had some stuff on SportsCenter, had some stuff on the arena football social media, ESPN social media, I think. So shout out to him. He definitely killed it this weekend. But looking ahead for Albany, I think they're going to have a great time recruiting free agents in there. It's not a hard sell at all. I mean, you get to come play for last year's champion. You get to come play in front of the best fan base in the league. And when you're on the best team in the league, you know, scouts from other leagues are going to take notice. That's the top team. You know, who's their best player? Mm-hmm. Who's their guys? So, right. Albany definitely has a good pitch. I think they're going to do well. But, I mean, yeah, we're officially in the AFL offseason. We're, what, 3 days in now. Haven't heard any crazy rumors yet, but I'm sure things are already starting to move. Maybe not in Albany as much. Maybe they're still, you know, on the bender, but, you know, I'm sure for the other teams, the other five and whatever amount of expansion franchises we get, I'm sure they're already starting to work, starting to look ahead for 2020. You mentioned it. Everyone's a free agent in this league, so no player right now is under contract. We're expecting guys like Tommy Grady to go back to Albany. We're expecting Dan Rodeball to go back to Philly, Arvell back to Washington, et cetera. But it's an open league. You know, everyone's a free agent. A whole group of players from college football just didn't get drafted in April and didn't get brought into camp.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're right in camp right now, and no disrespect to them, about to get cut in a few weeks and about to not get another opportunity in a few weeks. So there's a whole list of guys. AFL teams have a huge big board of local college players from around the country, guys who got cut from NFL camps, guys who didn't even make an NFL camp, mini camp invites, CFL guys who got cut. I mean, there's a whole NAL guys, ISL guys, CIS guys, you name it. There's a huge list of players that want to play in the Arena Football League. Just, you know, guys want to keep playing football. Guys want to keep making money. Nobody's dream when they, you know, start out playing football is, I want to be an Arena Football star. But the NFL doesn't happen for everyone. And if you want to keep playing, the Arena Football League is one of the best places you can go right now in terms of salary. And as crazy as it sounds, because we haven't been able to say it for years, stability. I mean, the NFL is not going to fold.
Correct.
Next year. The NFL is going to play. You know, we're going to get two more teams, hopefully four. And, you know, we'll see at the Arena Bowl in 2020. You know, so we're not worrying like we were a few years ago in, like, March, like a few days before camp, like minutes away from not getting the CBA done. Like, are we playing next year? Not sure. And that's a kind of a thing of the past now, even as recent as it was. So it's a good spot to be in. There's going to be a lot of guys who want to go play for Albany. Philly obviously always does a good job recruiting. Bo Bell, I think he hasn't really gotten enough credit for the job he did as his first year as the general manager for the Soul. They've always had a good group there between Tom Goodhines and Lou Russo, and then Phil Bogle and Lou Russo as the GM, director of player personnel. Now it's all on Bo and his staff of interns. So Bo, he really did a great job. I feel like the Soul had a great influx of Division I players, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You look at Brandon Cottom, he's from Purdue. Tyrell Robinson from Oregon. Malik Forrester from Fresno State. I believe Jamal Burgess played Division I football. They added in a lot of guys with Division I caliber, you know, experience. Jameer Outsy, UNLV. There was a lot of guys that they brought in who played some big-time college football, were talented guys, and they really helped the Soul down the stretch because we mentioned it a few times. They started the year out 3-4 and then hit a hot streak, you know, throughout the season. Their only two blemishes will be that final week of the season against Albany and now the Arena Bowl against Albany. I think Philly will come back strong. Philly's going to keep their general core, too. I'm sure James Romaine will be back. Dan Rodabaugh, B.J. Bunn is the guy who will probably be back. Aaron Washer will probably be back. Prince will probably definitely be back. So you're going to keep a lot of those types of guys. But another thing about the AFL is retirements. You don't really ever know if someone is formally retired or not. Like, T.T. Tolliver played last season and won the Arena Bowl with the Valor. We never got a formal T.T. Tolliver retirement announcement, but he didn't play in the 2019 AFL season. So is T.T. Tolliver a free agent? Is T.T. Tolliver retired? We don't exactly know. Demo was one of the guys who did announce his retirement. Sometimes you get guys who do announce it, but other than that, you're kind of waiting and looking and not sure. At one time, we had thought Sean Kalinimoku was retired. He signed a week into camp. He signed back with the Soul. So sometimes guys, you know, decide, hey, you know, I don't want to play this year. I think I'm done. And then camp starts up, and they miss ball, and they re-sign. They re-sign a week into camp. So the AFL offseason is fluent. It goes. Free agency in the AFL is always happening. We talked about it, and we haven't mentioned it yet on the podcast, actually, but we talked about it, you know, on my Twitter and stuff like that. Ken Richardson re-signed with the Soul on Thursday of Arena Bowl week.
Mm-hmm.
That's how fluent Arena Bowl is, Arena Football free agency is. And then Rod Windsor signed with the Baltimore Brigade the last week of the regular season. So guys are constantly deciding whether or not they want to play, what opportunity is the best for them. It's not necessarily like any of the Big Four's free agency. Things are very fluent. Things just kind of happen. Things move quickly. But last year was definitely a good job from the league's perspective, posting their free agency signings. I thought they did a much better job of that, keeping everyone in the loop of where guys are going. So I'm looking forward to free agency. I'm looking forward to free agency being earlier this year, now that we're not going to have February expansion announcements. I'm looking forward to them getting that started, maybe having an expansion draft. That can lead to some crazy stuff happening. So, yeah, AFL free agency is hard to predict, but very fun when it happens. You're going to get some crazy moves and some interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, yeah, having even float the idea of an expansion draft would just be insane but fun. And it would help out expansion teams, because I think we've seen it just this season alone, two expansion teams that didn't really look like expansion teams at certain spots because they were able to bring in the veteran that have played the game and that knows how the game is, you know, how the game is supposed to be played, and have the head coaches to do it. So when you add that factor in, and then, like you said, you know, everybody's free agent. You don't know who can move, you know. shoot, you could have a player who was a star on one team and say, you know what, I want to go try over at this expansion team, or I want to go join the Soul maybe, or I want to go join the Vale, or I want to go join Albany, and just really just turn the league upside on its head, like when Joe Hill joined the Albany Empire last season. That turned the league upside down, because you're like, huh, Joe Hill with Malachi Jones? Like, you serious? Like, what can you do to stop that combination? So I think, like you said, expansion should be fun. Free agency should be fun. Like you said, hopefully it started sooner. Hopefully maybe in the fall, maybe late fall, going into winter. That would be a nice, you know, thing to have there. If people have been following us for years now, you know, we used to do I think we had like an AFL like free agency tracker on Total Sports Live, like that one off season. Yeah. So that was fun to do. And have up there just to keep everybody in the loop. And nobody was doing it, literally. It was me and Harrison. Nobody else was doing it. But everybody was like, oh, this is really cool to have. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it'll be a lot of movement in that aspect. And then when you look at Albany and, you know, Philly, Harrison, you touched on it, and I think it's very true. Both teams are going to bring back their core, but both teams have a lot of young players that they are going to be able to build around and keep the pipeline going, especially on defense. Both teams are very loaded with young defensive, you know, playmakers.
Yeah, and I believe the rookie option, the recallable rookie option, is still in effect in the AFL, so you keep your rookies, which is definitely a good thing for both of those teams and all the teams in the AFL, because I felt like this year was a good batch of rookies. I felt like this is, generally speaking, a good class for AFL rookies. I feel like there was a lot of talent. The league couldn't even pick a rookie of the year between Antoine Grant, who actually today's his birthday, so happy birthday to Antoine Grant, and Fabian Garrett, two of the top rookie receivers in the league. And then me and you had talked about guys like Keontae Northington, Tevin Homer, Cheatham Norrells as guys who could have won a defensive rookie of the year had there been one. So there was a lot of rookie talent in the league. It's good to keep your rookies intact. The XFL is also going to be a really interesting thing for this AFL offseason. How aggressive will they attack AFL, you know, players? How aggressively will they pitch them to come join? Ron Selesky is a director of football operations for Tampa. Chris Thompson is in New York. So when you have guys with AFL ties, they're going to recruit some guys. Both of their AAF teams had a bunch of AFL players on them throughout the year. So I know Joe Powell has been invited to the XFL draft. I'd be stunned if Joe Powell wasn't in the XFL next year. He had a great NFL season this year with the 6 interceptions. A lot of people argued that he could have won Defensive Player of the Year. The Coffee House Show the other day with the one-man court case, that was a dope show, arguing between James Romaine and Joe Powell for Defensive Player of the Year. But for Powell, I definitely see him in the XFL next year after the great NFL season he had and the success he had in the AAF as well. Fabian Guerra is a guy who will probably get a shot in the XFL after his AAF success as well as his AFL success. Keontae Northington, a guy we already mentioned, he could be a guy who gets his shot. There's going to be a lot of guys who potentially have the opportunity to move up to the XFL. Greg McGeehee, a former NFL guy who was in camp with the Destroyers this year but wasn't re-signed after that, he was invited to the draft also. So there's going to be a lot of AFL ties in the XFL, and if they aggressively go after some of the AFL rookies, that could change kind of the dynamic of the league. The AFL is going to have to go out and get a new batch of rookies. So it's something to monitor. It's something to monitor, you know, how aggressive the XFL is in pursuing these AFL guys. I don't know the salary numbers off the top of my head for the XFL, but if I had to guess, I would guess that they were going to be more than the AFL. So that's another interesting dynamic to it. These guys are trying to make a living, trying to make as much money as they can while playing football, which I totally understand. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. We talked about it last year with the AAF, and we did see some guys, a lot of guys actually, move up to the AAF. And had it not folded, it was expected that Malachi Jones wouldn't return to Albany. Dwayne Hollis might not have returned to the Soul, and there's more names too. So those are two guys who were both on All Arena. Malachi was the best offensive player of the year and won the championship. So it would have been a dynamic, and it could be potentially with the XFL moving forward.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned the XFL salary. Just found a story on 247 Sports. It says, per Bleacher Report, XFL Commissioner Oliver Luck sent a letter last year to agents informing them the XFL could pay as much as $200,000 a year for elite players. So when you have that as the benchmark, that's a pretty penny. That's a pretty penny for a lot of guys and be able to make that jump. So like you said, we'll see if, especially with the XFL having some arena ties, or they poach some guys, which means if they poach some guys, does that open up doors for guys that are playing in the IFL and the NAL who are saying, you know what, I dominate at this level, like a Charles McCollum or a Hilliard, or, you know, guys that played in the IFL that put up numbers, that could be their opportunity. Now you say, you know what, they don't have an opening. I think I can fill this role and be a standout star here and continue in my lead up the football ladder. So, hey, we'll definitely see how everything ends up shaping up this offseason. You'll hear it first, only here on the High Motion podcast. We got a couple more minutes left in our final show for the season. Don't worry, there will be shows this offseason. There's our final regular season / postseason show. And before we wrap up, though, we do got to give our final thoughts on the AFL season. It was a great season overall. As we've discussed, like, I think before the playoffs started, you know, this is a league that really had a great bounce back year at all levels. You know, it was a league where you could feel proud of. You know, it wasn't a league where it was like, all right, we got like four guys here and you got four teams here and there's really nothing to watch. It's like, now we got something to watch. The talent is there, the players are there, you know. You got the ESPN3 package, which worked out really well for the league. The broadcasters, sideline reporters, all did a great job. It was a great launching point for AFL 3.0, as Harrison dubbed it to me earlier this morning. I didn't even peep. That's what we're calling it now, AFL 3.0. But it was a lot of good to take away from this season, and I know Harrison had one big point that he wanted to point out that really stood out to him from just this entire season.
Yeah, so I mean, it really stood out to me from last week from the Arena Bowl, and it was how well ESPN did with the broadcast and the promotion of the game and the social media and the viewership on social media that it brought in. And in the NFL's past, I feel like they had been afraid of social media. I feel like they hadn't embraced it and really ran with it and just promoted their game and put their highlights out. This year, they really did. They had a highlight of the week each week. They had their top five plays. It was on the broadcast and the social medias. They were active on social media. It seemed like they had someone who wasn't 70 years old running the social media, so that was a positive to have that kind of youth presence on the social media. It wasn't a dull and boring social media. That's important, man. Listen, social media is here. It's here to stay for right now. It's where everyone is. It's where we all are during the day. No matter where you are in the world, you're probably on a social media at some point during it. So for the AFL to be out there, it was really good this weekend. One thing I noticed was a lot of people in the comments, because, you know, I'm an AFL junkie. I got to see what people are saying. I need this validation to make sure people are loving on the AFL. A lot of people didn't even know it still existed. A lot of people didn't even know it was happening. So to be out there on social media, to be putting it out there to, you know, some younger people and some people who just maybe generally just weren't, you know, sure about what it was, it's definitely good. There were some highlight plays. Terrence Moore's onside kick was the number one play on SportsCenter's top 10. That was a crazy play. That was one of those, like, oh, my God, plays as soon as you saw it. Amazing play that he recovered. If you haven't seen it, definitely go check out the AFL social media and watch it. But that's something we couldn't say a few years ago. You know what I mean? We couldn't say go check out the AFL social media and watch this highlight play. All you could see was the box score. And the box score doesn't do a game justice. That's just numbers. You have to see what really happened. So I'm excited about that. Some of those AFL videos on Instagram got over 1 million views on ESPN's page. That might not sound like a lot to someone who watches NFL stuff, but for the AFL, 1 million views, that's never been in the realm of possibilities of things. So just to be able to have the sport, the walls and the big-ass nets, you know, in front of a million people, that's something that we never thought, you know, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, last year, would have been happening. So for ESPN to be promoting it like that is definitely good. Like I mentioned, our guy Ben Fratinelli from 50 Yard Dash had his whole Malachi feature on ESPN, on SportsCenter, throughout the day. They had in the bottom corner of the screen, watch the Arena Bowl, Philly versus Albany at, 8 o'clock on Sunday. That type of stuff is important. Just being out there, being able to find the sport, being able to find the game, you know, that means a lot. That means a lot for viewership and just the league moving forward, trying to be successful. They're trying to build something. They're trying to build a national brand is what they've been saying. They're trying to, slow and steady, but you look at the partnerships they have with DraftKings and now ESPN3. It was a great partnership this year. They had the game on ESPN2. They're trying to get this game out there. So stuff like that is really important, having that stuff on big social media pages. The Tom Brady versus Tom Grady thing. People didn't know about that. People didn't put 2 and 2 together for all those years because Tom Brady's been in the AFL since 2010, and Tom Brady was definitely still good in 2010, but it took them 9 years, but people finally put that 2 and 2 together and realized it was a funny little storyline, and hey, it kind of caught fire on social media, right? It was CBS posted it, Deadspin posted it, I think Bleacher Report posted it, and I know, for an NFL fan maybe just listening to this, that doesn't sound like much, or a fan of any of the major four sports, but for the AFL, it's huge because the AFL is professional football, don't get me wrong. But from a viewership standpoint, the AFL is a minor league, just being honest here. The AFL doesn't have the following that these other four leagues have. It's a second-tier league right now. But for, this promotion, for people to be seeing the game, for people to be watching it, it's huge. It's huge in the growth of the sport. It could hopefully attract some more fans. They're going to announce these markets in 1 to 2 weeks, hopefully. So for this game to have been out like this, hopefully those fans in those markets, even though they don't know they're getting a team yet, and that's why we wanted them to announce at the Arena Bowl, but that's neither here nor there. Hopefully these fans, maybe watch this game and then, oh my gosh, we're getting a team in this city. How great. So I like where the AFL is at. I love MSV. I think they're a great organization. I think they've done a really good job so far in their time with the AFL. The social media has never been better. The league hasn't been this stable since before 2009. I don't want to sound like I'm, drinking the AFL Kool-Aid. I think they still have a lot of work to do. I don't think they're even close to done yet. Like you mentioned, this year was fun. We're still at 6 teams right now. 6 teams is not where we want to be. We're still a very, small footprint on the arena football world. There's only 6 cities in the league right now, and hopefully we get up to 8 or 10 soon. But there's definitely a lot of room for growth for the AFL. They have to keep putting, positive steps forward. They have to keep building on this. Arena Bowl weekend was really good. This was one of the best Arena Bowl weekends they've had in a while. You take that, you take some more steps forward. You announce expansion. Then you have a great offseason. Free agency is entertaining. The championship belt, we haven't even talked about that. I don't know your feelings on it. I loved it. I thought it was dope. That's super cool. I think it's cool that they can put the team's logos in. I think it's cool that there's room for more logos. And I like that they didn't get rid of the Foster Trophy either. They touched it up. They made the Foster Trophy look nicer. It's not a miniature replica version of the Foster Trophy anymore. It looks like an actual Foster Trophy, and they put the new logo on, and it looks like it's shined up. It looks like a new trophy. So stuff like that, and it seems small, but stuff like that is really important because if you don't do it, it looks sloppy, and people notice. People will say, oh, look at the AFL stupid trophy, that minor league, semi-pro, ha, ha, ha. No, you have to have professional standard stuff if you want to be a professional league. So this year was good. Like you mentioned, I felt like 2019 in general was a positive step forward. I'm hoping that 2020 is another positive step and then 2021 is another. And then they can slowly but surely build this into something sustainable, family affordable, and friendly. I know I sound like an AFL recording of a salesperson, but that stuff is true. That's how minor league baseball has made their money for all these years. That's how minor league baseball has stayed alive for all these years. NHL, AAA hockey, it stays alive in these smaller markets. And that's kind of what I'm hoping for the AFL. Maybe a better comparison would be the MLS for their future goals. But right now, just from a logistical standpoint, you look at it, how minor league baseball made their money, family friendly in smaller markets who need a professional team. And that's why Albany does so well. after talking to some locals throughout the weekend, the Empire are really their only professional sports team. That's the only team that they can really get behind as this is Albany, you know, through and through. And that's why they support it so much. So I think that could be something the AFL looks forward to in the future to try to find more markets like that. But whatever they do, 2019 was a good year. 2019 was a fun year. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in 2020. I don't think they can take, you know, any steps to make it as bad as it was a few years ago when they had four teams and when it almost folded, it didn't look like they were going to play. And then even you date back to the 2016 offseason where everyone folded. We definitely went through some dark years there for 3 years. So I don't think 2020 has any chance of being that bad. Hopefully I didn't just jinx it. But I'm looking forward to see what they do.
Yeah, me too. And just piggybacking off of that and talk about, you know, just piggybacking off of that, one idea I think that the league should think about just based off of how well the just based on number one, when the AFL season happens, it starts late spring going into the summer. Based off of that and how the Arena Bowl did on ESPN2, I think the league should think about putting a game of a week on ESPN2. I think that that's something they should really think about doing. I think it can't hurt. Obviously, it helped them to get more eyes on the TV. I mean, we see it with the WNBA, for example. You know, they have a TV deal with CBS Sports Network, but they're also on ESPN. They're on ABC. They're on ESPN2. They're on the ESPN app. You know, they're putting out multiple ways to catch a game. And I think for the AFL to continue to make it not be like, oh, I didn't know the AFL still existed. Moment two, I'm going to watch the AFL now on a consistent basis. Maybe you think about putting a game of a week on ESPN2. Maybe, you know, next season, the first game of the season is Soul Albany, right? That's game one of the season. You would rather have that game on ESPN2 than ESPN3. It will only be right.
That's what it's all about, man. It's all about getting it in front of more people, you know, letting more people know about the AFL. And one of the things that just kind of struck me all weekend was I felt like there was a lot of, you know, real excitement about being on ESPN2, as there should be. It was huge for the league. But a few years back, we were on ESPN2, like, every weekend. There was always an AFL game of the week on. I'm sure you remember when L.A. and the Soul played each other in L.A. Anthony Hanger called it AFL After Dark. You know, that was on ESPN. That was on the ESPN network on TV. So promoting it from ESPN's point of view is a huge thing for the league. And I think because the AFL is more stable now, I think because it's a better-looking product, it's not as kind of, you know, I think they touched a lot of things up. It's definitely, you know, MSE stamp approved. They cleaned it up a little bit. I think it was easier for ESPN to really get behind it with the league being in such a good spot. I think when the league was, you know, kind of in this, well, we're doing okay, but we're losing teams each year. We might fold eventually. You know, I think it was harder for ESPN to put their stamp of approval on that. With MSE cleaning it up, showing some stability over these past few years, they probably, you know, had a meeting. The MSE people probably did a great job in that meeting. I think it made it easier for ESPN to be able to say, yeah, let's promote this. Let's make sure, you know, we have it in a little ticker at the bottom and, you know, make sure we, you know, talk about it on SportsCenter and post it on our social media. You know, they're just posting stuff like, what a play, with a crazy play in the game when Maurice Leggett got the interception. Bunch of views, bunch of retweets. I saw it on people's Instagrams and stuff. That's huge. So I agree with your assessment that they should be on a game of the week on ESPN. I think especially with more games next year, you know, let's say we get 10 teams, that's, you know, double the games we had this year almost. That's huge. That's important for the league, those extra two games compared to just having three. Now you have five games a week. You might have a marquee matchup a weekend. You might have a really interesting matchup a weekend. I think that's huge because this year, you know, as much as you said this year they did a better job, there was more to watch. The games got a little repetitive at the end of the year. I mean, some of the teams had seen each other a few times. Baltimore and Washington played each other a few times. Philly and Washington had met up, you know, a couple times in the regular season. Atlantic City and Baltimore, I feel like they played each other like four times. As they did a good job shortening it and mixing the schedule, but at the end of the day, you kind of were seeing the same teams week after week. It was what it was, that we made it work. Next year with more teams, I think it could be definitely a more viable thing for ESPN. So I like that idea. It could come down to the contract that they have. I'm not sure that could wind up costing the AFL money. But yeah, I think if possible, that's definitely a good idea.
Either that, or we give, or we do the playoffs on ESPN2. Either way, we got to
okay.
get him back on
yeah.
ESPN2 with Matt DiRozio in Bristol doing the halftime show. I mean, come on,
that's cool.
We had an AFL halftime show. I mean, come on, that was great.
You can't beat it. These are things that we were not even thinking about a few years ago. These are things that were not in the realm of possibilities for the AFL. So hopefully they can take it and just build on it. But like I mentioned, you know, they did some stuff like this, but it's just all about the promotion of it. And with ESPN kind of getting behind it and promoting it and putting it on SportsCenter throughout the day and then having highlights of the game, you know, post-game, after the game, and then doing a little comparison. They had, like, their little ESPN graph of the Albany Firebirds in 1999 and the Albany Empire in 2019. That stuff is important. Another huge thing was them changing the Arena Bowl from Roman numerals to a numerical number to just 32.
Mm-hmm.
It made it just naturally easier for people to see, wow, this league's been around for 32 years. So I'm hoping that they can build off of it. The AAF had a lot of success in the winter. I'm hoping that the AFL can kind of, as weird as it sounds, because the AAF was only for 50 days, don't ask me how this happened, but I'm hoping the AFL can fill the void of the AAF moving forward. It sounds weird to say, but it's true, because the AAF really, they did a great job of getting a huge following behind them in that short amount of time. People were genuinely upset when that thing folded. A lot of people were watching it. A lot of people wanted to see how it played out. So if the AFL can try to kind of capitalize on that and move forward, I think they could be in a good spot.
And it's funny that you bring this up, and this is last point before we wrap. It's funny that you bring up, you know, how much attention the AAF got and only they were around for like 50 days, media attention. And I'm not talking TV. I'm talking people that covered the game of football were writing about the AAF. Like, CBS Sports was writing about AAF consistently, obviously because they had a TV partnership with that, but they were writing about it. The Sporting News was dedicating time writing about the AAF. I mean, there's no reason why, and this is coming from somebody from a digital media print journalism background here, saying, and you would agree with me, Harrison, since you're in the same space and realm and do it at a high level, is that we need, in addition to TV and the TV and the radio broadcast, et cetera, we need these print outlets and also these digital outlets to start going out and covering these games as well, and covering not only the games but covering the players as along with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll just give some credit right now on that same line of thinking. The Atlantic City Press did a fantastic job of covering the Blackjacks. Patrick and Dave, those two killed it all year, and Nicholas Huba as well. That group of guys, they did a great job covering the Blackjacks this season. Patrick did a feature a week. Dave would do a game story, and they would do opinion pieces about it. They would do some columns. They had a whole bunch of covers for the Blackjacks. They really just embraced it. The three of them just got after it, wrote a bunch of articles. They would put out like a picture from practice each week. They would go to a practice a week. That's what we need. So definitely a lot of credit to them. I know Albany, I think the Times Union, they are a partner with the team. They play in the arena as well. So they do a very good job as well. The Philadelphia Inquirer in the past has done a really great job. We've talked about Ed Barkowitz. This year they started to, you know, send people back out. I think for most of the season they might have missed a few games, but for the most part they had a member at each game. I definitely think that was good. I would love for them to dedicate someone to the soul, cough, cough, Jovan Alford, give him a call. You can reach him at, here's his number. No, I'm kidding. But definitely they should be hitting you up to do that. But I think it would be great to have, you know, someone full-time covering the soul. You know, maybe come to a practice a week. And, hey, you don't have to be at every practice. Just show up to a practice a week. Ed Barkowitz did that, and it did a lot for Barkowitz's coverage. He would break news in the AFL. Barkowitz was obviously the go-to guy back then, but Barkowitz would break news. And Obert in Arizona, I mean, those are two guys that definitely killed it with the AFL coverage. And then Adam as well, that's three guys right there. But I think, you know, moving forward, it definitely is important to get these prints out, to get the news out. Because people, hey, listen, journalism is a little bit down, but people still do read the paper, especially, you know, older people and stuff like that. They want to know what's going on in town and stuff like that. So I think it is important. And I think, you know, getting more, as weird as it sounds to say now, like YouTubers and stuff like that, social media, you know, influencers and stuff like that, People go out and go cover sports games and stuff like that on YouTube. They do videos and they get a bunch of views. Esports is huge. How can the AFL implement esports into the Arena Football League? Because I know Ted Leonsis knows about it. He does a lot of stuff with the NBA 2K League. He has a Washington team. I don't exactly know what they're called, but Ted is definitely on the esports wave. So how can he and his team implement that in the AFL? There's a lot they can do. The AFL is kind of this untapped market with potential. People like to watch sporting events inside, and people like football. You put the two together, could you have something there? That's kind of what MSC is betting on. So I'm excited for the future. Obviously, me and you are Arena Football junkies, so we're super biased. We probably sound like we're drinking the Kool-Aid. We're totally, you know, on the AFL bandwagon. We're totally, you know, let's go AFL. But they have a lot to do. The work is not done yet. They still have to, you know, make some positive strides. But I'm excited to see where they go. I think the future really could be very bright.
It definitely can. I think that's a great point to wrap it up there. We really appreciate everyone that has joined us from late spring to late in the summer as we head in the fall. We really appreciate everybody that stuck with us and tuned in and shared, retweeted it. You know, listen to all our podcasts from this season of High Motion Podcast. This idea wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Harrison Brown. He came up with the idea. He pitched it and was like, we should do this. And I'm just like, all right, well, yeah, since, you know, the AF is not around no more, we might as well give this a shot and see what happened. And in my opinion, I think we've done a great job with it. We not only gave great analysis of the games and transactions, whatever, we've also added new elements to this show. You know, went from just, you know, talking about games to now actually bringing you the players from the game and hearing from the players from themselves about what happened in the game and just their overall career and things like that. Bringing more awareness and attention to the game, Arena Football, I thought was very huge for us in our first year of growth. But that's not going to stop there, because as we've noted many times, we will be back during the offseason to cover to talk to some legends of the game. You know, some players that are still in the league. You know, we're obviously going to be talking about some free agency stuff and expansion stuff. So hey, when expansion happens, I'm pretty sure there will be a podcast for it. Don't get it twisted. It will be there. We'll have that, and then now since AFL season's wrapping up, we're going to be transitioning then to college football and NFL season. So expect a podcast from that. We already have a name for it. We're not going to say it now, but because you know people like to take names. But we'll be on the lookout for that podcast as well coming up. I'm fairly sure in a couple of weeks. College football starts in a couple of weeks. So be on the lookout for that. Harrison, anything else I forgot to plug and all that good stuff? I think I tapped everything, but I might have missed something or two, maybe.
That sounded pretty good, man. That was a good wrap up. This year's been a lot of fun, man. Doing these podcasts with you, writing for Arena Fans, covering games and stuff like that. It's been a good year for the Arena Football League. We just touched on that success, but for ourselves too, I had a lot of fun doing this podcast. And now, I don't know what our next podcast will be for the Arena Football League for the High Motion Podcast, but I know it'll probably, you know, hopefully be soon, within the next month or so. You mentioned it. We're going to start up a lot of our college football coverage. I'm recording this show. I'm in Connecticut right now. Tomorrow I'm heading over for the Ivy League Football Media Day. I'm super excited about that. That's going to be on Twitter Sports Live. I'm going to write up an article. We'll have a lot of audio clips from that, too. Just looking forward to the college football season and the NFL, obviously. But like you mentioned, we're going to try to keep this thing going in the off season. We're going to do a bunch of interviews with some guys who, you know, from the past, who maybe you haven't heard from in 5 or 10 years. You know, what are they up to now? We want to be able to bring that. And then, you know, as guys start to move around in free agency, as guys decide on where they want to play, we'll be able to sit down and talk to them, do an interview with them about their decision and their careers moving forward. So there's a lot of good stuff. The Arena Football League season is over. What will our next podcast be? I'm not exactly sure, but I know it'll be a good one. So I'm looking forward to it, man. Thank you for doing these shows. Jovan does all the behind-the-scenes work for these shows, all the descriptions you guys read, the intros, making sure they're all touched up right on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, and all that. I just call in a few minutes before and try to talk some NFL junk, you know. So definitely appreciate you and you know, everyone who listens. It was a fun year. I'm looking forward to the off season in college football.
Definitely. So for me and Harrison, We'll talk to you guys very soon. Make sure you follow Harrison on Twitter at Harry Brown Russo, because he's in Connecticut right now. We'll be at Ivy League Media Day. So if you're into college football and the Ivies and the FCS, make sure you follow him there. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeVon10 and check out ArenaFan.com and TotalSportsLive.com. So for the High Motion Podcast, we'll be back sometime in the offseason, but look out for us as we'll be bringing a college football / NFL podcast coming to your ears very shortly. So, like I said earlier, if you're following us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Blog Talk Radio, that's where we'll be able to find our new podcast coming shortly. So, for me and Harrison, everyone have a good one. We'll talk to you guys in the near future.